also Samba team member. So I'm going to talk about CTDB and performance of CTDB. Now, CTDB does a lot of things. Martin has already talked about it, those who are attending Martin's talk. So CTDB does a lot of things. It basically implements active-active cluster. It implements communication framework for Samba across cluster. And also, most importantly, it manages the databases across cluster for Samba. In addition, it does IP failover, load balancing, service monitoring, so on and so forth. So when you talk about CTDB performance, it's really related to the time-critical components, or the critical components of CTDB, which are basically the communication between nodes and the database operations. So I'm going to talk about a few issues related to performance, and many of them are, two of them are really database driven. One is the network issue, and the database performance is more of a, sort of a to-do or what next item. So, last few years I've been presenting about CTDB. I always give a status update on what happened in the last year since I talked at the previous Samba XP. So, as many of you may know, that earlier CTDB was a separate tree, and it sort of continued for a while. 2 years ago, CTDB tree got merged into Samba tree. However, the CTDB tree itself was still active, and we did a final release in February, and now that tree is basically frozen. So all the future development, or even last 2 years, all the development has been happening in the Samba master, and some of it has been backported. So I put this slide in so just to indicate that there aren't too many developers doing development in CTDB. We want to change this, and one of the main reason is that we have a huge spaghetti code which we are trying to separate out. Sorry? Yes. So this is since January this year. Okay. So let's get into the parallel database recovery. I have talked about this last year, that we identified this big issue of Samba CTDB deadlock. For those who don't know what it was, I'll quickly mention it. So the observation is like this. You have a working cluster, Samba cluster. For some reason, one of the nodes goes down. Either it's administrative action, or it simply crashed, whatever. So obviously, CTDB will detect this and will start recovery. So one of the first things in recovery it does is freezing all the databases. That means it has to lock all the records in each database. However, it cannot do that. So it fails freezing one of the databases. And then it tries. It fails. After a few tries, it just says that, okay, this node is misbehaving, and it bans the node, right? But now, it still can't freeze on the other node, and eventually ends up banning all the nodes in the cluster. Really bad situation. So what was the cause? So Samba is holding a lock on one of the records in one of the database, and it now needs another lock. So it asks CTDB to migrate that record, because it's not local, it's somewhere on some other node. And as CTDB is trying to migrate that record from the D-master, D-master goes down. Right? Now, Samba is waiting for the record. CTDB detects that, oh, okay, one of the node is down, I need to do recovery. But it cannot freeze that database on which Samba is already holding a lock, basically causing a deadlock. So the reason why this happened, because the original database recovery was basically serial. and it was very, very dumb. It would just iterate through all the databases, start freezing one. So start freezing database one, database two, three, like that. And once all the databases are frozen, then it will start the recovery. That means pulling the records from all the nodes, collecting them, and then redistributing them. And then unlock or unfreeze. So however, we know that this causes deadlock. But why am I talking about this issue when I'm talking about performance? Well, one of the side effects of this serial recovery is that the recovery daemon is not doing anything else when it's trying to do recovery. See, recovery daemon does a lot of other things. It's basically a monitoring system for CTDB. So when you're doing recovery, it cannot do anything else. And something else might go wrong or whatever, so we might need to do something else. Some other action needs to be taken. So this also becomes a performance issue. So we thought about it, and because the Samba's database model is that each database is independent and not dependent on each other, we can recover them independently and in parallel. So how do I go about doing this parallel database recovery? So I looked at the code to sort of, you know, the core code which actually does the recovery. And as I said, it's not that complicated. You freeze the databases, you start collecting records, you push the records back on all nodes, and you unlock the databases. So it's basically all the client code as far as CTDB is concerned. However, we don't have a libctdb. We don't have a nice abstraction where you can write a client code, you know, using some library. We had a rudimentary implementation of libctdb, but it didn't quite implement everything. So, and because it was incomplete, we just got rid of it because nobody was using it. Another thing was, we do have some client code. Obviously, it's in ctdb client.c, but it's not fully async. That means it implements some controls in async fashion, some controls are not fully async. One of the bigger problems is it relies on nested event loops, and we definitely don't want to use them in any new code which we are going to write. So the motivation for writing this new code is we want to make sure that the code is async, because we want to make sure we use parallelism. And if we can, you know, fire off as many requests to do various, like for example, freezing databases, so we can sort of freeze databases of all the databases simultaneously, and then, you know, process them in async fashion. And we have a very good abstraction for it. So T-Event Rec is a really good abstraction for doing async computation. So it obviously means that we need a new communication framework, because right now we don't have that. So the entire CTDB code uses T-Event directly, and many times it's quite messy the way it uses it. Now while doing this, I also wanted to look at how we handle protocol. Now, the way current, I'll give details on that in a second. So I wanted to improve protocol handling somehow, because obviously, if you're going to write new client code, then you would have to deal with the protocol. And also, I want to improve the testability of the code, right? So where is this protocol code in CTDB? So when I started, it was distributed in 3 or 4 header files. Okay. And more importantly, the implementation of all the marshalling was embedded in the implementation of the code itself, or the logic itself. So that makes it really hard to do any testing on it. So, So first thing I did is pull out all the database, all the protocol structures in one header file, right? Rename them where it's necessary, and try to separate the structure from the on-the-wire representation. Many of the CTDB structures are actually on-the-wire representations, so which really sucks. Then provide a standard marshalling API for the basic structures, and for higher level or the packet level elements, provide a push and pull functions. Well, obviously, I'm still trying to get it right with all the integer wrapping issues, but it's almost there. So, as I said, I needed a new communication framework. So, I started implementing various abstractions such that they can be tested. So, one of them was DBHash. It's basically a hash table, and we already have a good hash table implementation in TDB. So DBHash is just a wrapper around TDB to give us a hash table. Then also we use some other abstractions in CTDB for keeping track of all the clients which are registered or all the processes which are waiting on some messages identified by serve ID. All the clients are tracked by request ID. So, you know, sort of start adding these abstractions, which are standalone and can be tested. Then I needed the basic read-write API. Now I wanted really to use what we already have in Samba, which is the read packet send. However, one thing it does is it basically every time removes the FD from the epoll set and then keeps on and adds it again. So I wanted to see whether we can avoid that. So this read and write is just it's sort of a more lower level abstraction, so to speak. And then COM is a basically communication endpoint which combines the packet read and packet write together to give you a higher level abstraction. Then, of course, implementing all the marshalling for protocol, and then writing the client code. So the client API for sending controls, for attaching databases, or reading, or getting locks on records, and things like that. Now, you see there are two columns here. So the column on the left is the number of lines of code each module has taken. And the number on the right is number of test lines of code written for that particular module. Now, when I wrote the client code, I needed a way to test it, or rather unit test it. Now, how do you unit test a client code? So the one tool which we already have, which uses most of the client functionality, is the CTDB tool, which basically talks to the daemon. So I basically rewrote CTDB completely using the new API. Now it's in red because it's not yet gone upstream. But now I have another problem. How do I unit test the tool itself, the new tool? So now because I have all this infrastructure ready, now I have implemented a fake CTDB. We already had some unit test for the tool, so currently it implements only the functionality which is being which was tested in those tests. We obviously plan to add those add more tests to this tool. So when I switch from the older or the current CTDB tool to this new CTDB tool, if there are any mismatches, I can catch them very quickly. So that sort of gives you the idea of the amount of effort involved. It took me almost around 9 months to get all the abstractions right, getting all the tests, and you know, be in a position to write the database recovery, parallel database recovery. And as Martin has already mentioned, that now it's nearly a 3,000 line helper code, which is completely client and completely using new API. And that's what it does. It starts freeze on all databases. And once it knows that the database is frozen on all the nodes, it recovers that database and goes on. And obviously, it unlocks that database. So any Samba processes waiting for records on that database can then continue, and then they can release the other lock, thus avoiding the deadlock. So what are the next steps here? So obviously, most of the CTDB tool has been rewritten. I need to get that upstream. I've also written a lot of the test code now using the new API. Now this test code was, it's part of the integration tests which we run on every commit. So they are pretty much torture tests for CTDB. Yes. Well, right now I need both of them.
Sure.
So, okay. So that took really a long time. And we also noticed that while now that I have done all this effort, we might as well improve the database recovery slightly because there are few kinks in armor, or few chinks in armor. So how do you basically recover a single database? So all the databases are frozen on all the nodes. You send pull DB control to all the nodes, and they respond with the data in the database, right? So now you combine all the data and then push the data again all to all the nodes. So where's the problem? So PullDB and PushDB use a single Marshall buffer, right? That means all the records have to fit in one buffer, however large that buffer might be. So since the buffer is allocated using Talloc, we already have a problem, because Talloc cannot allocate a single large buffer more than max Talloc size, which is about 256 meg. So if you have few 200 meg database, any database which is more than 256 meg, you're already in trouble. But in general, even if we increase that limit, do we really want to send 1 GB data in a single packet? Or whatever size. So, yeah, so just introduce new control, which instead of trying to send the data at one shot, basically register a message handler, and so CTDB then can send chunked data, so in batches. So this simplifies the problem. And then we also have, in the end, when you send a reply, you also return the number of records, so you always know you received the right number of records or not. And similarly, on the push, now, when you start pushing pushing the data back, all the CTDBs are not yet, they don't know that they are going to receive the data. So first you need to send them a start, so they start listening on for certain message type. And once we know that everybody is listening, then the recovery helper will start again sending the chunk data. So this is just a small, problem which we always had and wanted to get over it at some point. So, okay. Now let's come to socket handling. Why socket handling is an issue in CTDB? So if you look at CTDB cluster, so you have multiple nodes. Then between nodes, CTDB talks to other CTDB using TCP. And within a node, CTDB talks to, or Samba talks to CTDB over Unix domain socket. But that's not all. So you usually have few TCP connections because usually have few nodes. But we might have thousands of Unix domain connections because we might have thousands of Samba processes running on a node. And on top of that, CTDB itself creates a lot of helper processes, right? Every few seconds or every second. And they're usually very small and they're usually very short-lived. But sometimes they can, if the, like one example is a lock helper. Like if there is a lot of contention, you might end up with a lot of lock helpers. And they can be in hundreds, right? And every helper process has a pipe back to CTDB. So you end up with a lot of sockets and FDs with CTDB as one process has to deal with, right? It's a single process, single threaded CTDB. And here we really rely on the fairness of EPOL, right, to do the right thing for us. So I'll quickly go through the how it was done, how we read a packet in the original code. So we basically check for how many bytes are available, and you know, try to read the length first, and then try to read one packet, right? So T event gives you always a single FD. So even if you are monitoring thousands of FDs, T event will always trigger single FD event. And on top of that, then we read one packet. So obviously it's fair scheduling of EPOL wait. So it'll always, so if you have 1,000 FDs which have events on them and it gave you one FD first, then next time it'll give you the second FD and you know so on. So it tries to be fair. However, that affects TCP sockets. How does it affect TCP sockets? We noticed that we had a lot of pending data on TCP sockets. Now, TCP sockets are used for inter-CTDB communication, right? And it's sending a lot of, usually there are a lot of things going on. There is heartbeat, there are all sorts of controls, there are record migrations. So we want to make sure that that data, that stream is handled with some sort of priority rather than all the other sockets, maybe with Samba sockets or with other processes. So we could have taken many approaches. I'll talk about it in a second. So our simple fix was, you know, it's a very naive fix. Okay, instead of reading a single buffer or single packet, we now read what is available in on the socket, but up to a certain extent, right? So we read maximum of, let's say, 16K of data. So that it could have, you know, maybe 20, 30 packets, 40 packets. So we still are using T event, so only single FD is triggered at a time, but now we read multiple packets. So now we are draining the TCP socket quickly. It's still fair scheduling, but now we have solved the problem that we don't have any more pending data, right? But now the problem is, once it reads 20 packets, CTDB has to do something with each of them, right? And it tries to process all those 20 packets before going back to the event loop. So that means it can stay busy between EPOL, between two EPOL wait calls, because now it has to process 20 packets or 30 packets. So that's where we get this message. There is a extra check in CTDB's event handling that if we don't get events for a certain time, we always, that means if we, the time it takes from one event loop to next event loop, right? That is the time required to process events, and the time from the next event loop to the previous one the time from the triggering of event loop to after triggering will tell us how much time it took in EPOL wait, That means for how long we didn't get any event. So there is no easy solution here. So this is completely heuristic and it completely workload driven. So you might say, okay, don't maybe read 16K, read little bit less. But again, it's a heuristic number. One way we can prioritize is using multiple event contexts, right? But in the current design, it's very, very hard to do. Well, maybe stop dealing with thousands of FDs in a single process, right? So that's another motivation for splitting CTDB. So we need somehow better infrastructure, better communication infrastructure. So one of the idea is we write a proxy, so the internode communication is completely sort of offloaded from CTDB daemon to something else, right? So it could be Unix message or new tmond, maybe. Well, this handles only part of the picture, right? Part of the story. This only handles in node or within the node communication. But what happens? How do you do better TCP? Maybe stop reinventing wheel and just go to use something which is already there. Maybe, maybe not. Yeah.
Recently, my customers were very, very disappointed with zero FQ. They went to nano message, were also disappointed, and went to raw sockets again.
Okay. Well, whatever. So, I mean, yeah, we have a problem. So, it's we need a better solution.
So, is the underlying problem you need to prioritize various file descriptors?
Yes, that's one way of dealing with this problem. So what we really need is an efficient way of handling data across TCP sockets. I mean, so right now, because...
So you want to prioritize the inter-CTDB messages?
Yeah.
So you know that TEvent can now be used with threads. There is a threading model that you can use. So theoretically, you could essentially have, you could spin off some threads to handle the high priority messages and essentially have them injected into the main event loop in advance of the other. So you basically layer it. You sort of have a tree structure of file descriptors. So you have a lower level event loop that's handling those lower priority ones that feeds up the socket to the main event loop. The main event loop is pulling stuff off the internode sockets. There's ways to structure this, basically. And if you're, the nice thing is if you, you know, because I know CTDB isn't thread safe, but you could at least spin up threads that simply do the socket reading, put it into a shared data area, and pass that to another component. I mean, we can talk about that. I designed that for the TEvent. And that might be a way of... Because I actually tried to create a prioritized TEvent mechanism. They failed miserably. It was a horrible mess. But doing threads and basically having hierarchies of events might be a way to get around this problem.
Okay. Yeah, so we definitely need some work to be done here. Okay, so that sort of brings me to the last topic about databases. So we have two database models in CTDB. One is called volatile databases and persistent databases. So volatile databases, they are distributed data. That means data is, records are sort of distributed across the cluster. You always need to know where the latest copy of a particular record is. Persistent databases have replicated data. That means they have exactly identical data all the time. Yes, so volatile, there can be single copy of a record. There is a single copy of a record, of single copy of the latest record. Persistent, obviously, as many nodes, as many copies. If a node fails, we really don't care about any data on that node for volatile databases, because all that represents is the state of SMBDs on that failed node. And since SMBDs are gone, we can afford to lose that data. Whereas persistent databases, we don't want to lose that information. Registry, secrets, users, whatever information. Now, if you look at the mutex for each type, so volatile databases, basically it's raw TDB. So we have the smallest lock level is basically per chain or per hash chain. So obviously it's per node, per DB, per hash chain. For persistent, we have cluster-wide per database mutex, also known as glock. Both the databases are disk-packed. So if you do a traverse on a volatile database, because it's distributed, obviously it's cluster-wide traverse. And as Volker has noted, that it's not always consistent. We can make it consistent at an extra cost. Question is whether we need it. Persistent is just a local traverse because every database has the same copy. The biggest advantage is volatile databases give you shared access. That means Samba and CTDB both can get to the database at the same time, right? Whereas persistent databases is sort of a client-server model. That means any updates have to go through CTDB, right? So Samba never updates persistent records directly. So if you look at volatile databases, CTDB is involved in migrating the records because they're distributed. We always need to know where the latest copy is, and if Samba needs to modify a record, it needs to first migrate that record to local node, and then it can directly access it. So record access is local, and once the record is local, CTDB is not involved at all. Samba can directly go and modify the record. So for these databases, scalability is really dependent on performance of TDB, right? So any improvements in TDB will give you improvements in CTDB performance for that database. So like one example is when we switch to using mutexes from FCNTL locks. So this sort of gives you idea of how much improvement we got. So this is single process trying to access single record. So it gets the record, modifies it, and keeps doing that. Right? So we can see, and this is a fairly old machine. So 7 to 8 year old, Xeon server with reasonably decent disks. Now, obviously, there is no contention here. There is only one process trying to modify the data. What if there is contention? So this is a two-node cluster, so you start the same process on both the nodes trying to modify the same record. So now we have a problem, right? Obviously now the record is bouncing between the nodes, but still we can see the clear improvement with robust mutexes. Now we can do another thing. We can now have an option in CTDB called CTDB underscore DBDIR, where all the volatile databases are put in TempFS. So that gives you slight improvement, right? Now that improvement, the scale of that improvement is not really apparent here because we are writing only one record. And that doesn't really translate into a lot of write activity or a lot of dirty pages. But if you have many clients trying hammering the database and modifying the database, then the improvements are significant. So this is, we are talking about 300,000 writes per second, right? Now let's look at persistent database. So every update is basically a cluster-wide transaction, right? We want to make sure that they are persistent. And here the mutex is glock. So really the scalability depends on how good your Glock implementation is, or how good the performance of Glock is. And it sucks. So from 300,000, we are down to 3,000, or thereabouts. But wait. Because we do transactions, right? So it does fdata sync. And now we are down to 10 writes per second. So it doesn't matter, right? Because now this is irrespective of whether you're using mutexes or FCNTL locks. So so this is one of the biggest issues where we need to do something, or we need to figure out whether we really need full persistence for everything. Well, obviously, you can do concurrent transactions on different databases. So, you know, if you're doing multiple transactions on multiple databases, yes, you'll get higher numbers. But per database, you can do only 10 transactions. Now, at last Samba XP, really, you know, there was a whole discussion on, you know, persistent handles, how do we get there, what is the need for, I mean, how, what is the requirement on CTDB's database models to implement such a thing. And I really wanted to work on that, but, you know, long story short, I never got around to actually trying various database models. Now, what sort of database models we are talking about? So let's say persistent in-memory database, right? So it avoids fdata sync overhead. And it could be used, very well used, for storing CTDB's information. See, right now CTDB stores a lot of state information which is synchronized across nodes in a sort of ad hoc fashion. But if we have a way of distributing or having a cluster-wide transaction, then we have a way of already distributing that information across nodes. So maybe we can use that, and by storing that database in memory, we'll definitely improve over 10 transactions per second. The other model is, so persistent database has cluster-wide per DB mutex. What about we introduce per chain mutex, right? Now obviously, right, it gets over the single transaction per database limitation, but it's only useful for updating single keys, because now you are locking only single hash chain. So it's again, in some of the CTDB state, it's very useful to update single keys. So we can again use this sort of a model. Yeah. No. I'm not saying. See, now we start. We have two models. One is volatile. One is persistent. They are the two extremes. Now all these models which I'm trying to show, they are somewhere in between, right? So it.
Don't you sequentially send the data to the call in the end?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not saying that here, so in this case, you would have to avoid the transaction at all. Yeah, so I didn't mention it, sorry. So when we are updating single keys, we can just go ahead and update it, because we already have a lock on that as a Glock. Yeah. But I'm saying I'm modifying the basic persistent model and, you know, tweaking it a little bit. Because I don't have names for these various models, I'm saying, okay, basic model is persistent, but now whatever I'm changing is highlighted there. Maybe I should have used different colors, so for colorblind people. Another way is maybe persistent but lazy replication, right? See, right now when you do a cluster-wide transaction, you don't get a reply till all the nodes have returned from the transaction, individual transactions across all the cluster. What if we do local transaction and then replicate the data in a lazy fashion. You know, or it could be limited replication, right? So it still avoids the, you know, single point of failure, so you don't lose the data immediately. Depending on how many, you know, failures you want to afford, you can have those many copies. And so maybe that might be good enough for storing persistent file handles. See, currently I don't even know what the requirements are for persistent file handles in a clustered database. And of course, you can approach this even from volatile database side, where right now we just write the database once, write the record once on a local node. But maybe now we start replicating that record. So sort of reducing the replication from persistent and increasing the replication from volatile. So again, this could be another model for persistent file handles. Yeah?
One comment, just, I mean, when thinking about persistent file handles and so on, it's important to also think about the non-clustered case. So we have to have a model in TDB or whatever locally that then can be generalized to CDBs. And even if you would like to have a persistent handle on the cluster, so you have at least a node, but it should also work.
Sure. But then in that case, I need to start with, okay, what do we really need for persistent handle?
Yes, exactly.
And then figure out how to store that information. So my next step is going to be, you know, trying to experiment some of these models and see whether how much benefit we can get, and hopefully, in the meantime, somebody may tell me what do we need for persistent file handles. Yeah, so that's about it.
Any questions over there?
We shouldn't forget Rusty's soft sync thing that he wrote.
Yeah.
We should actually try that out and see how it performs.
Yeah, so Rusty had written a sort of a log-based replication model using it's called soft TDB or whatever. So it's not a full transaction, but it's a log-based transaction. So in case of failures, you can still recover and so on and so forth. But it avoids the need to do full fdata sync on each commit, transaction commit.
Any further? Can over there.
So obviously we probably don't have time to go into it today, but I am curious at a high level. If you step back, we have two clustering models. We have Microsoft's clustering model around the witness protocol and various continuous availability features. We have our CTDB model, which predates, in some cases, the Microsoft model. One thing I'm curious about is now that we have fairly solid prototypes of some of the witness protocol work, a little bit more progress on persistent handles. You touched a little bit on persistent handles. I'm wondering if there has been any thought about the tying the witness protocol notification prototype in with the CTDB node detection, the CTDB equivalents. Now, the models don't match perfectly, but I'm sort of wondering if the two are talking. The guys working on the witness prototype, are they talking with you?
Yeah, I mean, we did. So right now we have a few controls which give you some information. So obviously, Gunter? He's using that information to get, I'm hoping that he's using that information to get the cluster information. But we don't publish full information required for witness. Like, we don't currently have a way of publishing interface information. So maybe we can add those controls to give, you know, whatever information required for witness. So we can obviously add those controls. So not a problem. But if you try to compare the two models, then we always wanted a, you know, full active cluster with Well, it was more as, you know, how do we get the TDB spread across a cluster? That's what really is the motivation behind CTDB. Now, if you want to implement newer database models, well, we can, newer clustering models, well, we can always do that. One of the hope is, Martin and I have been working towards trying to, you know, split away various chunks of code, which is in currently all embedded in one process, so that finally we end up with lean, you know, database daemon, which then we can parallelize because we can have one database, you know, daemon per database, and you know, a lot of things can be done to improve, like writing proxies for communication, so we don't need to. All the messages don't have to go through CTDB, right? They can be independently done with a lightweight process. So yes, there are a lot of things to be done. We are getting there slowly. Yeah.
Any questions? So that's it. Thank you very much, Amitai.